insight.
The following is an interview with Deepti, a longtime Orevillian. Through anecdotes of her life in Oreville and experiences working and living here, the listener will gain perspective into the possibilities of Oreville, where Oreville has been, and where the city the Earth needs may go.
Good morning, Andrea. I'm happy to be here.
Deepti, could you start by telling us a bit about your life and how it brought you to Oreville?
Well, you could almost say that I've got two stages in my life. My life previous to finding Sri Aurobindo and the one that began to happen when I found Sri Aurobindo. I was lucky enough to come across Sri Aurobindo at the age of 16. I was coming home from school, finished my final exam, and I happened to come home to a family that was an armed forces family, and so fully involved with the Bangladesh situation because my father was posted at the Eastern Command headquarters. And so there was the war. It was quite dramatic. And as my mother was a doctor too, they were both completely preoccupied with this situation. We were in Calcutta. And I remember landing upon a book which said Sri Aurobindo on Bangladesh. Now, this is at a time when Bangladesh didn't exist. So it was startlingly interesting. And then when I read it, for the first time, I read things that actually made sense, were addressed topically to the political situation, to the situation of Indian culture. And it resonated completely with my 16-year-old consciousness. But that disappeared, kind of. I mean, I forgot that I had read that. But suddenly, for the first time, and I was quite questioning the situation, the sort of things we were taught in school, the received ideas that we were told to just accept. And I was not so much in harmony with the sort of things that I read, and I was too young to find my own articulation of how I would view situations. And actually, Sri Aurobindo, it seems to me that the first voice that spoke rationally, reasonably, intelligently to me, that I could resonate with, was Sri Aurobindo's. And I really wish that young people could actually hear him, read him, because I think that he speaks in a manner that would be very appealing to young people all over the world. Well, it certainly worked for me. And then it so happened that my father, too, had a very strong experience during this operation, which lasted just a few weeks. And in many ways, what took place was startlingly not possible, because there was almost a lack of soldiers, heavily armed soldiers, the army surrendered within a short frame of time after committing almost a genocide, which is not spoken of. A million people died in East Bengal as a result of the atrocities of the West Pakistan army. This was East Pakistan, on the East Pakistanis. And, Bangladesh was born from that crucible. But what took place was, even for the generals, including my father, very surprising. So he wanted to find out more about it. And of course, this booklet had done things to him. And he had also been in touch with the mother of the Sri Aurobindo ashram. So the whole family came on a holiday to Pondicherry. And we happened to turn up, strangely enough, on the 21st of February 1972, which happened to be Mother's birthday, which happened to be the inauguration of Matri Mandir, which happened to be Sri Aurobindo's centenary year. So we came, my little 16-year-old head, plus my sisters, who were younger than me. And those 3 days were quite life-changing, because then I actually got a little more into what Sri Aurobindo was saying. I left with his massive poetry, Savitri, this book which is the longest English language poem in blank verse in the English language. And for the next 3 years, I read that book. That was the only thing that spoke to me when I was questioning the situation of the world. So, of course, I was a person with a lot of questions. I was not satisfied with the answers that I was being given until I came across some of Shobindo's odd remarks here or there. For instance, that evolution continues, man is a transitional being, humanity is not the last rung of the order. And I said, but of course, why would material nature settle for the human being as this being is presently constituted? This is most unsatisfactory. One dreams of a world of beauty, of sweetness, of truth, of goodness. And the human being is incapable of creating it in his present state of consciousness. So, to understand why it is so, to understand what the progression would be, to make sense of, you know, you study biology and Darwinian evolution in school, but to understand the psychological and the spiritual implications of it, it was most liberating. And it was clear to me that, okay, now I know what I want to do. So it took me a few years to come. I made a few visits to Pondicherry on my own this time. And it was on one of those visits, I was just 19. And after 3 weeks, and I said, but why am I going back? This is my place. But my place was Pondicherry, Shobindo and the mother in Pondicherry. I haven't chosen Auroville. I don't have a sense of having chosen anything. Once I was in Pondicherry, automatically I began to work in Auroville. I would come out in this van that would come out. And actually, the architect's office needed a secretary, so I taught myself. I was a youngster. I taught myself secretarial work. And for the first year or so, I would come out every day, and I was working in the architect's office. And it just became the logical next step, because if you want to create a society which is intentionally wishing to change, but change from within outwards, to evolve into deeper, higher, profounder, wider spaces, well, then you need a critical mass. You need a sufficiently large group. And it also seems completely logical to me that it should be people from all parts of the world. So Auroville became the natural step into this yoga, that it became the field of action. So for me, Auroville has always been the field in which one finds oneself. But the main purpose of being here is to discover that alternate, that higher, that other state of consciousness which already exists within us, but we don't normally have contact with in the normal course of time, but yet one can touch it. The normal human being touches it in vast imaginations, in visions, in dreams. All young people dream of a perfect world. I don't imagine a single young person on earth who doesn't. But generally, rationality takes over and you're told, no, it's not possible. For me, at least, I said, that's not true. It is possible, but there is a journey to be made. And it starts with certain steps, and these are the steps. This collectivity that is here in Auroville, or even the earlier collectivity that was created in the ashram, or any other collectivity that intends to grow within outwards, rather than outwards merely, is a step in that direction. I think we should not forget that Auroville stands upon the shoulders of human aspiration, which has expressed itself through countless ages and wherever it expressed itself. And we just represent the present flower of that expression. What is interesting about Auroville is how absolutely comprehensive its aim is. It's all-inclusive, that aim. There is nothing that's left out of the scope of the Auroville experiment. So that's what brought me to Auroville, and that's what keeps me here.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing. And now, can you speak a bit to, I've heard this before, but I would love to share it with others, how you feel about Auroville's place in India and Auroville's place in the world?
Well, this particular physical Auroville is situated in the body of India. Now, I don't think that's an accident too. It's in India because it could only begin in India. Yes, all over the world, human aspiration has expressed itself in groupings. But in some ways, what's interesting about India is that she has kept alive the highest aspirations of humanity, the aspiration for a concept of God, divinity, supreme perfection, which is vaster than many others, a concept of light, which is vaster, a concept that the universe comes from delight and it's going to delight, an idea of freedom, whether it's freedom of religion, freedom of self-finding, freedom of expression, this idea of a supra-social being which is incorporated in the sense of what we call the sannyasi, that is a being that stepped out of society and is in pursuit of the self, but clearly defining the self as the inner self, the recognition that there are other selves besides the outer material self, the recognition that the body, the mind, the life force is not all we are, that what we are is a soul personality, an Atman, and that this soul personality has a mind, a life, and a body as instruments. The recognition that the mind cannot know, the mind as an instrument of organizing, an instrument of comprehension, an instrument which helps you to make sense of the world, but the mind cannot know. To know, one has to transcend mind, to make mind silent, and arrive at an inner space of knowing. All these ideas have been prevalent in this country for millennia. And I think that's what she has to offer to the world. And perhaps in this universal expression that Auroville wants to be, she can create an idiom, she can create an expression which is so international and synthetic in its spirit that everyone could relate to. Therefore, in my view, Auroville and India have a huge work to do with each other, a seminal work, and India has been the mother which has held Auroville in her lap and held Auroville well. Because if you think of some of the issues that Auroville has thrown up, I don't imagine any government in the world would have tolerated some of these issues. The fact that the Indian Parliament, politicians are not given for wideness of vision. They are at best practical beings. At worst, often politics is the last refuge of scoundrels. Okay, but in that frame, the fact that the Indian Parliament could pass two acts of Parliament, helping Auroville to be more established, recognizing that Auroville represents an arrow shot into the future. This is what one of the members of Parliament said when this discussion was taking place in New Delhi, that Auroville must be supported. Now, this sort of support, I don't imagine any other government would have lent to Auroville. So even materially, then if you look at the local area, here are all these alien outsiders who've landed in a place which, at least materially, in 1968, was quite backward. It's an error to imagine that the local area lacked culture. In fact, it is deeply rooted in its culture, and in 68 it was, but it lacked basic amenities. There was no health facilities, the land was denuded, and people were living in extreme poverty sometimes. So when Auroville started, there was this huge dichotomy between the material actuality of the land on which Auroville was situated, and this incredible dream, which is almost postmodern in its conceptualizing. Now, I think the whole story of Auroville is how these two realities, actualities, meld and synthesize into each other. And we're still in process. We haven't solved anything. But it's interesting, that process. But one of the things that is very noticeable is how we were welcomed. How we, I mean Auroville, was welcomed in the area. There was no question. Now, this intentional community that is Auroville has, again, much that it can look back to and analyze. If you look at intentional communities, take the US for instance, it was settled by European settlers as well as people who were brought there, maybe in spite of themselves, as in the case of the Africans, and others, the Asians, who also in smaller numbers settled there. What were the local population treated like? You find that they were not treated well. So we have that illustration. You look at Australia, we have that illustration too. So we know how we shouldn't do things. Those who were on the soil here were here before us. If there is anything to be built in Auroville, it has to be built in harmony, in a spirit of inclusiveness with what is already present. It's not that we are going to build a super city and a slum. If we are going to build a city at all, it's going to be a single synthetic movement towards the future, inclusive of every element on the plateau. So this immediately creates a huge contradiction for Auroville to work out. And I find that wonderful. It's also part of the reason why we are in India. It's part of what we have to work through. Part of what makes Auroville materially real. Because if we don't face the problems, how do we solve them? It is only by confronting the opposition, I mean, of material existence, the contradiction of material. I don't mean opposition in terms of people. But just life itself is not easy in the world. And why should it be easy in Auroville if Auroville wants to find solutions? So that too becomes a reason why Auroville is in India. There is a spiritual reason, there is a material reason. And then there are all the reasons in between.
Now you speak to this process which Auroville's undergoing, and I'm curious to know more about how you see the process unfolding in the future, be it 10 years, be it 100 years.
Well, actually, I'm glad you said 100 years, because having been here all these years, when I first came, and I think it was so for all the other youngsters who came. We were very young, we were very idealistic, and we were very enthusiastic and sort of had the impression that we would do it very quickly. After all these decades of being here, I am now in the middle of my third decade of being here, I realize to create change is not easy. So, yes, I think in 100 years Auroville will become very interesting. I have no doubt that Auroville will be, because there is no alternate to trying such an experiment. In the short term, what do I see? If you had asked me this 20 years ago, I'd probably have given you a big spiel. Now I am more reticent and more humble about what I see. I can say what I would wish to see. What I would wish to see is, one, you know, if you look at the remarks that Mother makes about Auroville, she says in one of her conversations, to be practical, one must have a very clear sense of where one is going. I would wish that Aurovillians would clarify very strongly to their minds and to their life spirit where they are going with what they're doing at present. Because I think if you allow your aim to align your action, even your daily action changes. I think that if you just act, because circumstances demand you to act, without measuring your action against your highest ideal, that's different. Just if every Aurovillian would measure what they do against that. Actually, that's supremely practical because it realigns your action against this measure. So that's one thing that the individuals could do. As a collectivity, another thing Mother says is, heroism is not what you think it is. Heroism is to be united. Then she says somewhere else, I can only work with you if you agree. Now, for me, these are basic measures of action. We should not act until we find agreement. The heroism that's asked for from Auroville is unity. Now, unity, if your aim is unity, then you wait till you get it. You don't act with half measures. In my view, Auroville acts a great deal because it feels it needs to act in half measures with compromises. So I don't accept that, and I think there is practically another way to go. Practically. And this is speaking from the point of view of an organizer, speaking from the point of view of even organizing, let's say, a school, organizing our governing structures, organizing our economy. I'm talking about practical things which we could measure against the ideal. Then we can consciously recognize that there are some actions we are taking which are a compromise of the ideal, but we are consciously recognizing that they are. We're not being pragmatic merely. There's a difference. So that's what I would wish for from Auroville.
You've mentioned that you're an organizer. If you could, please be a bit more detailed to our listeners abroad as to your role in Auroville at present state.
Well, actually, for the past decade, I have refused to be involved with organization because I did not have a good experience with the manner in which we organize things in Auroville. And I resolved that I would rather just work on my self-development, which comes best through teaching and through being involved with education. So when I said that I like organizing, it's because my natural instinct is to go into a situation and begin to see how it fits in. When I first came, I was involved with such structures. Actually, right at the beginning, I was in the, when I was very young, I was in this office. And for many years, I was doing the secretarial work of this office. I taught myself whatever needed to be learned. And then I remember I felt that it was time to organize a boutique to sell the Auroville products. And we had just created a first trust for the first handicraft units. So I remember managing the office of the Artisana Trust, which was the first trust for business units, creating a boutique first I didn't actually create that boutique. That was created by an earlier Aurovillian who's now in the US, Brian. But I took over the boutique from him and actually made it much bigger, shifting it to Aspiration. And then I actually left that work when it shifted to the visitor center. So I was helping to do the boutique. And also I was involved with whatever those coordinating groups were in the early years, such as we used to call it the Auroville Cooperative for a while. Then what did we call it? The Executive Council. And I tried my hand at some of these things, liaising with Delhi. I organized, at the time when we were 400 people in Auroville, or 300-400 people. And somehow I had this idea that, Auroville was a bit in the doldrums because of all this issue with in the early years about the land and ownership, and we'd had some difficulties with those who had held the title deeds of the Auroville. And we'd had lots of trouble, and I was very troubled by that inwardly. And at some point in time, in those days, in the early 80s, in the 70s, the United Nations years were celebrated with a great deal of enthusiasm all over the world, the year, International Year of Women. And 1985 was the International Year of Youth. And a few years previous to that, I had got this idea, but International Year of Youth, Oroville is the city of youth, we must have an international seminar in Oroville. Now, I put this out in one of the meetings, and Orovillians were enthusiastic, and so I wrote it, this idea I wrote to somebody in Delhi, and he happened to be in the government, and he took it up, and before I knew it, I was running after this idea. So from 82, 83, I was going up to Delhi all the time, and it became a huge affair. For in February 1985, we had 250 young people from around the world. Some of them were students studying in India. Some the country sent, actually from the Soviet bloc, the communist bloc. For the first time, we had Russians who were flown in straight from Moscow to Oroville as a result of the government-to-government contact, because, you know, India had a privileged relationship with the East European countries. Romania, Bulgaria, Mongolia, the Soviet Union. We had delegates from all these countries, and, you know, it was dazzling in Oroville because this was a whole section of the world that we had never been open to. And so you had these young people from all these countries. Now, it took us 2 years to organize this. We had no infrastructure in Oroville. So we created an organizing team, and I was the coordinator of this team. And everyone in Oroville chipped in. So this was my experience of unity in Oroville, because every single Orovillian was in, even the young people were engaged in this process. Where do you house? We ourselves have hardly any infrastructure for less than 400 adults, and we are going to get another 200 odd adults from around the world. Where do we house them? Everybody's houses. But people don't have facilities in their houses, so we began to make lists of beds and mattresses and whatever anybody needed, we provided. So our coordinating team was providing materials for the infrastructure. We had somebody managing the transport. We had to hire buses because we didn't have transport in Oroville. We didn't have phones that many. We had a few phones. So we asked the telecom department of India to give us more phones. Suddenly, for the period of a week, Oroville's population, you know, increased. We were almost 700 people on this plateau. And it, you cannot imagine, Andy, how inspiring that moment was. For me, certainly, to be in the center of this coordinating event, I coordinated nothing in the end, because all the people who were doing everything were doing such a marvelous job that I was almost out of a job. All I had to do was hold the strings together. But everybody else did such a marvelous job. The reception, these two men, Subir and Ananda, Ananda is still here, they just slept in that office for 10 days. So that if the delegates ever had any issues, they were 24 hours available for them. Because we really didn't know how this was going to work. We, you know, what is now Kala Kendra. Bharat Devas was a derelict. We made the auditorium, we repaired the auditorium. Where are we going to feed almost 300 people? We had a team for the kitchen. They were Trojans. They were just so fantastic. They didn't sleep for 10 days. They would wind up at 11 at night. They would start at 3 in the morning. And they cooked 3 meals a day. The delegates would be taken every morning for breakfast. And then we would have whatever was happening with the seminar. The seminar was on human unity. But it was almost beside the point, the actual talking. It was just having everybody here. And we made a kitchen for 300 people, 1985, in what is now Kala Kendra. So to do this kitchen, Popo was the one who repaired the whole Bharat Nivas. We were racing against time. We didn't feel we'd be able to get anything together, but miraculously, everything was got together. And for a week, Oroville occupied another dimension, completely. It was so delightful. And for me, that became my measure. if Aurovillians really shoulder to shoulder work together, we can do just about anything on earth. Because what we started with was an impossibility. And it was so supremely possible, it was so smooth. And really, as the coordinator of that event, I spent that week going from place to place and saying, can I help you? I would go to the kitchen, I would go to the reception, I would go in the seminar rooms. May I be of some assistance? And everybody said, no, 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 Deepti, you are very busy, go do your work. And I actually had no work. So it proved to me that coordinators in Auroville should actually not have any work, because everybody is doing such a perfect job in themselves. So that's my sense of an organizer, a person who creates a condition whereby there is no work left because everyone's doing such a great job. Your job is actually to make sure you create the conditions for other people to do their work. So that's what I consider an organizer. The youth here was a fabulous event, and I think everyone would confirm that who was part of it at that time, because the atmosphere in Auroville was just, we all breathed an air of possibility. After that, I actually joined the school and I started to teach, and that's what I've been doing since. So that's been a kind of a major preoccupation since 1985, being involved with education, and that's what I'm passionate about. That's what I have remained involved in, and discovering new ways of being. And that I find is a fabulous thing to do, because I teach because I learn doing it. You never have answers, particularly if you teach in the manner in which our team does, which is not based on a syllabus. Trying to experiment with what Mother said, free progress education, and I think she intended Auroville to follow free progress. She gave a list of names to Auroville called last school, after school, and then she said 1, 2, 3, super school and no school. In my view, from the day I saw this list, just names, she didn't give any explanation for it, but in my view it represents a psychological progression where somebody begins in no school, in last school, which is a place for training you. Your faculty should be trained, develop to their highest, and that's the process, until you arrive at super school and no school, and then Auroville itself becomes the no school environment. Everyone who comes to Auroville is a student of this vast human experiment, which is taking the human condition as it is and lifting it to a species beyond humanity. Because Auroville is supposed to be, in another message of Mother's, le berceau du surhomme, like a cradle of another being. And to do that, we have to learn, we have to be students. It's a place of unending education, constant progress, and a youth that never ages, according to our charter. So in my view, when she says that free progress is an education, this is her definition of free progress, guided by the soul, not subject to habits, conventions, and preconceived ideas. Certainly, we should not do less than that. Now, exam programs, there's nothing wrong with tests, because I think we all need to test ourselves constantly. So any test that's not mechanical is good for even a young person, particularly when a young person needs to evaluate their stage of development in a particular subject, whether it's language skills or mathematical skills. But it should not be governed by a preconceived idea, a convention, or a habit. Because conventions, preconceived ideas, and habits prevent the soul from shining forth its light. If we recognize that our job as teachers is to allow that inner being to come forward, we have to create rigorous frames, but vast and wide enough to allow for this thing to happen. Nothing mechanical, nothing fixed, nothing over-organized. So that's the way I work. And it's a permanent challenge and great fun. So I'm enjoying doing that. I will not do anything less than that. So if the Auroville kids are no longer interested to work in that direction, then I'll do something else. But I won't teach just a mere syllabus program. So that's where I'm at right now.
Thank you. And you've mentioned to me a bit about a book that you're writing. Are you comfortable to share that with a greater audience?
Well, actually, I've been involved with publications. I've contributed towards Oroville's learning teaching material, you know, which we brought out in the past. And then for many years, I was editing and we were publishing the Matri Mandir group, and I was doing the editing and putting together of this, what was called the Matri Mandir Journal, from, I think, 97 to 2003. We brought out a series of journals for the Matri Mandir, which was kind of my dream of exploring the spirit of Oroville. It's, you know, these arguments that I've given you about being true to the aim. I thought, okay, let me put my thoughts where my my wishes are, and let me bring out a research publication. And what better to do it with than the center of Oroville? What does the soul of Oroville mean? So with these journals, I was doing that. And so I did that for a while. Now we had an exhibition at the beginning of the year in law school, which four students, did you see it? The four students exhibition called Passage, which was an expression of their 5 years of being in law school. And everyone who saw it in Oroville was so utterly delighted by the quality of creativity that many people suggested we turn it into a book. So from there has emerged the idea that we create a publication, which is a sort of a research into all these years of free progress, using this group and their 5 years. They came to us as teenagers, 13-year-olds, today they're 18, to use their growth, implying what did we do with them, what were the subjects we did, how did we do them, and using Passage as an illustration of the result. Because this is a material, it's not abstract, it's material, it has pictures, it has videos, so we'll attach some sort of device, a DVD device which has pictures. Maybe the kids are going to put this film together. I'm just going to do the text and put it together. It's going to be the students, their work. It's an old student of ours who's going to do the DTP, so one of our last schoolers who's grown up, he'll do the DTP. Perhaps if the kids can do the film itself, they can do the film. My job is only to write the text and, you know, string the words together. So it's a small job, but I was focused on that for the next few weeks, if not months. I just feel that it's great to be part of something that's moving upwards, even if it moves in a very zigzag manner, even if the direction sometimes obviously is not clear. I think we have the grace to be part of something for which the major work, you know, there, it's an old dream of humanity that we create a society that aims at perfection. A progress aimed at perfection, because there have been societies aimed at progress, but no society aimed at perfection. And Oroville is a society that aims at a kind of a perfection, an absolute on all the planes of the being. When you think of it, the major work is to get people together in time and in space. Because human aspiration has always been present, but it's in pieces here or there, one person in one country, another person in another country. It's very hard to gather people together, both in space and in time, into a single concentrated spot. In that sense, this magnet that has been Shobindo and Mother have gathered these people quite spontaneously on a single spot. That's the major work. Now that we are gathered into a spot, I think the minor work is to put it together. It's just a question of organizing the pieces in their right place. So that's our work. Our work is to find our right place. And I don't think it's the big work. The big work, the work of consciousness, has already been done. So I would wish we would understand the limits of what we are being called upon to do and just do it.
insight.